How did Cozy Fantasy replace Grimdark? Hi, my name is Marco and welcome to another episode of the Storyline Sessions podcast. After a short break, I have a special guest. Herman Sturnagel is a fellow podcaster and an author who writes sci-fi and fantasy and believes in infinite possibilities of storytelling. His internationally best-selling debut lies The Guardian's Tale reached the top of the science fiction charts on multiple retailers in the UK, Canada, Australia and New Zealand. We talked about his new book, The Bartender Between Worlds, that marks a step in a new direction for Herman. It is a low-stakes cozy fantasy about cocktails, magic, portals, and finding where we truly belong. If you enjoyed the themes of leaving it all behind in books like Legends and Lattes, and the fun and low-stakes magic in The Wizard's Guide to Defensive Baking, then this is the book for you. We also talked a bit about his podcast, The Greatest Podcast in the Multiverse, and how the concept of the multiverse ties in with his future work. So get comfortable, and let's get into this week's Storyline Session with Herman Sturnagel. Enjoy! Hi Herman, welcome to Storyline Sessions, how are you?
Hi Marco, thank you very much for having me. I'm doing well, thank you.
Nice to have you here. So I'd like to start from your podcast, because we're having a lot of themes here about writing, and we'll get into your work in a bit. But for me, it was interesting because seeing your podcast, and we actually started almost at the same time last year. So I want to go a bit into that. What was your inspiration? Because starting a podcast in this, like, I hate to call it an industry, but like about writing, about creative writing, is still kind of a bit unexplored. Of course, there are a lot of podcasts, but seeing movies and games, they are so like topped up with so many niches, but still there aren't that many voices in writing. So how was your experience with that so far?
Yeah, it's been really good. Yeah, you know, really the reason I started it, to kind of your point, is that there weren't a lot out there that I kind of knew about at the time. I had been on a guest on a couple shortly before with the release of my last series, Eclipse. And one of the podcasts that I was on actually stopped shortly after I was a guest on the show. And so I really thought that there was kind of a need for a space, especially for indie authors, to be able to talk about their works and hopefully reach a new audience through that medium. There's, of course, a couple others, and a few people, it seems, started at about the same time. So I think there's a few of us that kind of had the same idea there. But yeah, my first episode, my podcast is called The Greatest Podcast in the Multiverse. There's a kind of a bit of a story and a tie into my upcoming books in that one. But I kind of started that one. The first episode was in, I think we released the beginning of August of this last year. So just about a year now we're coming up on. And yeah, it's been a lot of fun. I've really enjoyed being able to chat with other authors and get really more involved in the indie author community and meet both traditionally and self-published authors.
And how is the community for you so far? Of course, counting in social media and discourse around different platforms, forums. Are you enjoying being part of the community?
Yeah, it's been incredible. Like I said, I've had the chance to meet a lot of authors who I wouldn't have gotten to meet otherwise. And everyone's really welcoming, really easy to talk to. And, you know, when I started out, I was really nervous that people might not want to talk to me. I'm just this new guy starting out in the podcast sphere, at least, who they've probably never heard of before. So I really was wondering if I was going to have any guests. But I mean, I'm booked out for months now, so that's not been a problem. And just getting to know other authors has been really good, really encouraging. And as you probably know, I mean, you get to learn a lot of useful tips that you might not otherwise get to hear.
Yeah, agreed. I mean, a similar experience for me so far. I was also skeptical, but as the time passes, seeing so many like welcoming people and learning a lot from them, and so people being so open and willing to share their knowledge, for me that's been even far exceeding my expectations. And it's interesting, like hearing you talk about like being nervous a bit talking to that people and like getting into the community, because you are new, fairly new, as similar as I am into the podcasting world. But on the other hand, you've written 9 books so far. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So my upcoming book is actually my 10th book. So yeah, I mean, writing and podcasting are completely different. Different animals. So yeah, so I do have 9 books. I started publishing 2020. My first book was published. I didn't quite connect to the community in the same way at the time, though, when I published that first book. I didn't really know where to look for an author community. So, you know, one of the benefits of starting the podcast is that all of a sudden, you know, I'm within this sphere of authors that I didn't really have a way to connect with before that. And it's really helped me engage with other authors in the community.
Yeah, for sure. And would you do it differently now, like looking back, how would you start it off? Because almost 5 years later, now looking back at your first book, how would that look like if you're starting from scratch?
Yeah, that's a good question. And I think, and if I was starting over again, I would definitely get more involved in the community first. I think it would have taken a bit more time getting that first book out because I really... When I first started writing it, I didn't even really know that self-publishing was a viable option. I kind of came at it from the background that, you know, traditional publishing was the only way forward, and I didn't know how successful self-published authors were. So it was only, I mean, I came across a couple of podcasts and YouTube channels that kind of filled me in that authors were successful, but I think I would have taken more time with it. My genre is kind of out there. I would have built a few things differently, and really taken some more time to build my space in the author community. I think there's definitely some examples of debut authors right now that are doing a fantastic job with that, and I'm really impressed with how some of them are doing with their first book.
For sure, and the self-publishing space has been blooming. Like for the last couple of years, it's been so growing and growing. And like, of course, it was an option even back then when we were starting. But like in this short amount of time, it just like exploded. And your first series, I mean, both of them, but the one we see behind you on the posters, was that the first one, Fractured Orbit, or The Lies of the Guardians? Which one was the first?
Yeah, Lies of the Guardians was my first one. That one, yeah, like it's kind of a YA dystopian series, and it's, it's a really different series. I didn't do a lot of research into genre. I was just kind of writing what I wanted to write, and that was it. Fractured Orbit is my most recent series, and that's more of a space-based dystopian series, kind of in the vein of Red Rising and The Expanse.
Yeah, and both of them kind of got that dystopian vibe, but the first one is more YA and this one is more adult, but right. the themes are similar, so you've been kind of drawn always to space. How was that, like, are most of your influences in that way, or just something you, like, kind of enjoyed but wanted to try yourself in that like, subgenre? How did it come about?
Yeah, I mean, I've always been drawn to dystopian, both literature and movies. I grew up, I mean, kind of in the 90s on, you know, movies like Demolition Man and Waterworld and that, you know, vein of dystopian. So it's, you know, before The Hunger Games came out. And then even the books that I really like The Road and Hugh Howey's Silo series, those type of stories really always drew me, you know, what would happen after the end of the world and kind of in the far future if we had to build a society based on that. When I started writing Lies the Guardians Tell, I really had this idea of this futuristic landscape where AI has kind of taken over, but humans started to develop magic to kind of counteract it. So it's kind of a science fantasy story, but there's definitely a lot of those dystopian themes in there. It's just something that I've always enjoyed writing.
And how was the difference for you writing YA and going into adult? Kind of did your process evolve with that as well? Were you stuck at some points figuring out the voice? How was it?
Yeah, I think it definitely was a process. I think, you know, Fractured Orbit is, it starts out with two points of views, and one of the point of views is actually kind of almost closer to a YA point of view. So I did have to work kind of in the development of that first novel to shift it a bit so that it didn't seem like a YA novel to start, because I didn't want it to be in the YA category. Especially in the later books, things start to get a bit more, not gruesome, but definitely more adult themes that wouldn't really fit in a YA category. So there was definitely a bit of a process in developing the voice to fit more YA. And otherwise, though, like, even the first series, there's a lot of YA tropes that it doesn't have that I think a lot of people think of in YA. So there was, I guess, a bit of an adjustment, but it wasn't a huge adjustment. I read both. I mean, I read a lot of adult fiction as well, so it wasn't that huge of a leap for me to carry on into an adult series.
And mentioning tropes, what are your some of your favorite tropes that you like to use, but you know, they maybe get overused, but you still got a soft spot from them?
That's a great question. I, you know, it's funny, when I started writing, I had never even heard the word trope, so it was something that was new to me when I started doing this. So definitely in, I think, a lot of my books and most of my books, what you'll find is kind of the, I don't even know all the names of the tropes, but kind of like someone who grows up in a sheltered world and finds a larger world open up in the course of the book. That's one of my favorite tropes. I definitely like the unwilling hero. That's always fun for me. And you know, kind of the, my books haven't really delved too far into the fantasy world yet, but I really do like the, you know, the small farm kid that gets called to action into the bigger world. That's kind of been one of my favorites. So, you do see that quite a bit, in my books, and you know, the hidden world, that there's an outside hidden world.
Yeah, for sure. Those are fun. And I think that, like, talking about tropes and things that are common themed in fantasy sci-fi, it can be tricky on one hand, like approaching those things, trying something new, but not overusing them. So, and for you, kind of drifting from sci-fi, you're doing YA, adult sci-fi, and now we'll get to your new book in a bit, but how do you approach, like, genre as a whole? Because a lot of people are of stance that you shouldn't drift too far away from the thing you originally set out to do, and kind of talking about the market. Of course, we don't write for market, because, like, if we wanted to do something only for the money, writing isn't, like, top of the list. But thinking about that, have you gotten advice to stick to something that's, like, be known for YA, or just go into serious adult sci-fi and then, like, don't go to regular fantasy? How was it?
Yeah, it's funny. I recently had this conversation with some writer friends and who have been cautioning me not to stray too far from my genre, because like you said, I've written dystopia and a lot of it's sci-fi. My new book is more of a cozy fantasy, and that, you know, I'm going to confuse my audience and confuse the algorithms by switching genres. You know, my first series, I really didn't think too much about the genre, other than it was, you know, I kind of thought of Hunger Games in my head when I was writing it, so that's why I was like, oh, this is YA dystopia. As I said, I wasn't too familiar with the tropes, so I wasn't really writing to any specific market. I was just kind of writing the story I wanted to tell, and I think this is the genre it fits in. The same when I started to write Fractured Orbit, I kind of had the story idea in mind, and then it was a matter of finding comparable titles that fit and seeing what genre they were in. So Red Rising is a comparison that I usually go to when I go to Eclipse, because it's kind of a dystopian story set in space. It's set within our solar system, so there's, you know, that comparable there with Red Rising. So again, it was kind of more writing. I knew I was writing a dystopian story set in space, but even finding kind of the genre that fits in is difficult, because it's not the far-reaching, you know, aliens and faster than light travel that you normally get in a space opera, but it's not the typical dystopian where it's set on Earth and there's an Earth government that they're fighting against. I've been a little bit more intentional with my upcoming book, which is, like I said, was a cozy fantasy. It's kind of a newer genre, or at least it's classification is newer, at least. And so I really, when I came up with the story idea for this book and kind of the companion book that I'm also writing with it, I really wanted to get a sense of what cozy fantasy actually was. So I have been a little bit more intentional with finding, with doing a lot of reading in the cozy fantasy genre, seeing what kind of the tropes are for that, and helping myself to kind of market what that looks like to an appropriate audience, because I realize that my readers are probably not going to come along for the journey into a new genre with me. And so I really have to be a little bit more intentional in reaching a new audience that might enjoy this story and maybe not my other ones.
And since you're writing in that genre, I assume you enjoy cozy fantasy as well. And what's in it for you? Like, what do you get from cozy fantasy that you don't get from other genres or subgenres? And what are, like, some key points that make it different, that make it stand out? Because it's quite new, as you said. I think that a lot of people aren't still familiar with like everything that the term entails.
Yeah, I think one of the things that I get from it is probably one of the reasons it's become popular in the last few years is that, you know, it's kind of a break from the kind of the dystopian world that we're finding ourselves living in. You know, it kind of became really popular with Legends and Lattes, I think is kind of the breakthrough book. And that kind of came out in the midst of COVID. And I think what really people were looking for was just a chance to take a break from the news cycle and the doom and gloom that, you know, that we hear on the news every day, and just have something a little bit more lighthearted. And I think for me, you know, as well, having written kind of 9 darker dystopian books before this, it was just a chance for me to take a breath and write something a little bit more fun, a little bit more whimsical. And, you know, it still has some serious themes to it, but it's not, I mean, cozy fantasy is more kind of low stakes. It's kind of more about people. It's more about finding kind of ourselves in the process. And writing this, I guess, really has let me just have a little bit more fun with the story than what some of the dystopian books have done.
And yeah, we haven't mentioned the name of the book, The Bartender Between Worlds.
Yeah.
It's really an eye-catching title for me. It's really a standout. And I think that you mentioned in the beginning the whole multiverse thing and like your plans for the series, but let's stick to the first book for now.
Yeah.
How did that come about? Like, what were some like starting points for you to decide, okay, this is like a world that I wish to spend more time in and like fully flesh it out?
Yeah, so my initial concept for this book was actually going to be a reader magnet for kind of another book that I'm working on. But I'll kind of stick to this, but kind of, I had this idea of kind of this this pub between universes within the multiverse. So this story was basically the backstory of one of the characters. Her name is Emma. She's a witch hunter who discovers through some interactions that she actually has magic, and she kind of has to make the decision that, you know, what's she gonna do now that magic is outlawed in the kingdom that she's in. So she decides that she's going to run away and become a bartender and put her magical skills to use. So along the way, she kind of runs into some other characters, some unlikely allies that kind of help her try to discover where she should be. And this kind of opens up the multiverse for her. I've kind of said that it's Legends and Lattes meets Loki because it's low stakes, but it's got kind of the multiverse vibe to it. So there's a lot going on. And yeah, the original, I guess back to your original question, I'm kind of a rabbit trail there, but the original concept kind of came from this idea that what if there was a pub where there was they decided to brew a beer from, and the ingredients came from different parts of the multiverse that would culminate into this one beer. So that's kind of not this story, but this story is kind of a branch off of that story that'll lead into it later. This is a standalone book. You can read it on its own. It's a complete story. But there is a larger multiverse series that's going to connect to it as well.
And did you from the start know that it's going to be a self-contained thing? Of course, you have the multiverse, but like this story, you are writing it because a lot of people kind of go the opposite way and people are like, yeah, this will definitely be a series. And in fantasy, it's kind of a rare to see, at least in the last couple of years, like a standalone novel. So, yeah.
Yeah, you know, this was really meant to be a palate cleanser for me for my other series. My Fractured Orbit series isn't done. I really had put a lot of time into writing books 2 and 3. I released them at the end of 2023, both of them, one after the other. So it really was meant to be a break for me. I didn't want it to be something that continued, you know, on and on because I have another series to finish. So this was meant for me to take a break in between books 3 and 4 of my Fractured Orbit series because book 3 ended pretty dark. Book 4 is going to start dark. So I wanted something a bit lighter to kind of cleanse my palate in between. So yeah, it was always meant to be a standalone book. The book that it kind of branched off from is also a standalone book. So I've kind of ended up with 2 standalone books off of my palate cleanser side project here. You know, the trend does seem to be going towards longer series. And I definitely see that, and that my Fractured Orbit has kind of went in that direction as well. But I think people also are looking, you know, sometimes just for something that they can pick up, read, finish, and put down, and they finish the story. I know I've definitely found that when you have, you know, when you have your endless TBR list piling up, with, you know, book after book, and all of a sudden these books are now 5, 6, 8, 14 book series. Sometimes you just want something that you can pick up, read, and be done with, and not have to worry about adding another 12 books to your TBR. It was kind of, you know, the same with me with writing. It's something that I can, you know, I can pick up, I can write. I've decided, you know, to continue this multiverse, but it's not something that I'm obligated to finish because this story is complete. I can write another story later on in the same multiverse, and that story will be complete. Not to say that there won't be series contained in this universe, but it was nice to be able to have a story that I could just write from beginning to end.
I can imagine, yeah, especially comparing to other stuff that you write. And since we're on the comparison team, how would you compare your process between those, like writing on one hand series, on other hand, like the self-contained one, genre is different, team is different, characters are different, quite a leap away from the things that you usually write. So could you walk us through your process, both on like the craft side and like ideation and story-wise?
Yeah, you know, this story was, it was kind of, in some ways it was different, in some ways it was similar, I guess. You know, it really was a matter of me, I just kind of sat down and started writing this idea, and I wrote out a 20,000 page first draft, or 20,000 word first draft, and what was really different about this process for this book was that Cozy Fantasy is a lot about relationships, it's a lot about, you know, emotions, and that sort of thing isn't necessarily as key to dystopian, where it's more, especially Fractured Orbit. I mean, there's a lot of fights, there's a lot of explosions, there's a lot of, you know, political maneuvering. There's a lot more pieces that kind of, you have to kind of fit together to build on top of each other to get to the story. This one was more just kind of a, I got out the initial story, and then it was more about building the relationships and building the main characters that weren't the point of view characters, and working in how they fit in the theme and how they fit with the main character to kind of layer upon this experience for the main character, where she's discovering herself and discovering who she's meant to be in this world, where suddenly she has this power she's not supposed to have, and she's questioning everything that she's ever known, and doing that in a way that's more personal and more engaging with characters than outside political forces.
Yeah, and that makes sense. I'm thinking about like the larger conflicts, a team. I can imagine that took a lot of like outlining and planning. Would you consider yourself like a plotter or a pantser? I know that terms don't always apply, but in a broader sense.
Yeah, I mean, I find them a bit more in between. I do like to start out with a basic understanding of where I'm going and how I'm trying to get there. Usually by the time I'm partway through, that all falls apart and I have to throw it out the window. I don't usually stick to my outlines very well, but I do try, because the books that I've written, I think my second book, I just started writing it without any plan, and I ended up having to throw out like 30,000-40,000 words. And after I did that, I'm like, I don't want to do that ever again. So, because that's a lot of time. I'm not a super fast writer. So that, you know, that was a good month's worth of work for me. So I try to at least outline a base premise. I'll write a little bit, and then as I find I'm getting off track, I'll kind of take a look and try to figure out why I'm getting off track and kind of rework where I'm going, and then plan ahead a little bit. So sometimes I'm planning ahead only a few chapters, but I want to at least have a sense of where I'm going. So it's not a strict outline. I really have a problem with strict outlining, just because my brain doesn't like it for whatever reason. I have a really tough time sticking to it, but I do need to have a basic understanding of where I'm going.
And do you have like some readers that you always go to? Do you circle around? How's that part of it? How do you decide like this draft is now ready to move forward? How does that work for you?
Yeah, you know, honestly, I don't use a lot of beta readers. I know a lot of people kind of have a group that they swear by. I have a friend that I do send my manuscript to kind of once it's to the point where I'm comfortable with it, and get some feedback from him. Because, I mean, he's a trained story coach, so I understand, I know that he kind of understands plot development and that sort of thing. my first book I sent off to kind of a pool of readers, and it wasn't the best experience for me. I really had a hard time with the conflicting feedback and people not getting back to me and that sort of thing. And I just found that it was a bottleneck in my process that I didn't like. So this book, it's with a developmental editor now, so she'll give me some feedback on story structure and that sort of thing. Especially with it being a new genre, I wanted to kind of make sure it was hitting all the pieces it needed to. And then it'll go through, the line of it and that sort of thing to polish it up.
And how's your experience with editors so far? Do you have like a designated editor? Have you changed a bit?
Yeah, so for my very first book, I went through like four or five editors on that book before it was finished. And then after that, I kind of had the same editor from my second book until my ninth book. This book, I am using a new editor because it's a new genre. The editor I was using was pretty more thriller, sci-fi based. He was his focus, so I wanted someone who had a more fantasy based to what they've done. So a friend of mine who is also an editor said that she would do this book and the next book for me in this series, and so we'll see how she does. And I mean, I'm confident she's a best-selling author as well, and also does some edits, so I'm not too worried about what I'm going to get back from her. But I had a great editor for sure up until this point. It just because the tone shifted and I knew the tone of his edits were just a little harder, I wanted someone who had a little bit more of a fantasy focus.
I'm sure that like working with different editors can be helpful when switching genres, but it's also nice hearing that you found somebody that you could stick with from your second book to your ninth, because I know that a lot of people have issues finding the right editor. But you also mentioned that you dropped your last two books almost at the same time. How did that go about? Because was it like, did you plan that way from the start, or was it like by chance? How did that happen?
Yeah, it was kind of a disaster, actually. I don't recommend it, you know. So what happened is I wrote Eclipse. Eclipse came out February of last year. I had it ready in, I think it was October or maybe September of 2022. So I had a big lead up time. So I was writing the second book already. In the process of writing, the series was only supposed to be three books long. But in the process of when I started the second book, I had an endpoint in mind that I wanted my characters to get to. It was kind of the first book that I've ever had the ending figured out before I had anything else figured out in the book. I didn't realize how complicated it was going to be to get to that ending. And I ended up adding a third point of view. So the book ended up being 900 pages, and I had to make the decision. Eclipse was 300 pages. So that's a big jump from 300 to 900. So I'm like, okay, I had to either make the decision of releasing a really chonky second book, like I could probably have edited it down a little bit, or split it up and release it into two. So I made the decision to split it into two. I had to, you know, rework kind of the midpoint so that it made sense to be two complete books. And then at that time I'm like, well, I've pretty much written both books, let's just release them at the same time. So I scheduled Chimera to release in October and Resurgence to release in November, and yeah, just, I mean, I'm not sure why I didn't think that editing 900 pages even as two books was not going to take twice as long as editing one 400 page book, but I didn't think that through. So the November launch was really rushed. I didn't have the marketing push that I really needed to into that book, and I was burnt out by the time I hit publish on that book as well. So I'm not gonna do that again. If I can help, I'm always gonna give myself enough of a lead time to make sure everything is complete and ready to publish. So yeah, it wasn't planned from the beginning. It definitely was something that got planned closer to the date, and I didn't give myself enough time to do it. I still would have split the two books, but I would have released Chimera in October and probably Resurgence in February, just so that I could give each book the proper marketing push that it deserved, So I could do things like this and talk to people about each book beforehand, which I didn't get to do with either book, because when Chimera came out, I was working on Resurgence to make sure book three was ready, so I didn't have time to do the marketing for it. So, yeah, it was a bit of a push.
Yeah, but I believe it's a great lesson for going forward.
Yes,
lesson learned. And how is the feedback so far? And generally, how do you, like, you talked about a bit about like better readers and that kind of feedback, but now, like, from the side of the audience, how do you deal with the reviews? And like, of course, you have both kinds of reviews, as a lot of people who get any attention do. So how you, over the years, have you learned to like deal with some like not so favorable feedback, and what are some like good reviews that like really got to you? So if you could share like some examples, of course.
Yeah, sure. You know, I mean, I've been really fortunate. My reviews have been pretty positive overall. So like, I haven't had too many super negative reviews. My very first book got more criticism than the rest of them, and there was and probably deservedly so. There's a lot of things that I would have done differently if I rewrote the first book now, which I might still revisit, kind of clean it up a little bit going forward. But I've gotten enough positive reviews that the few negative ones that I get don't really bother me, because I realize my books aren't going to be for everyone. I mean, there are books that are critically acclaimed and highly acclaimed that everyone loves that I've read, and I think this is boring. I don't know why everyone loves this book. You know, so I don't take it too personally if someone doesn't like my book. I haven't had the experience where someone has said anything so bad about my book that it really offends me deeply that they thought that way. You know, some of the positive reviews, you asked about the positive reviews that have stuck with me. Eclipse got some incredible reviews when it came out. I got a book list review, which self-published authors have a hard time getting. From my understanding, so that helped me get into libraries and that sort of thing, because they only publish reviews that are I think 5 stars. So once you get into their catalog, that's where librarians in the US at least order, decide some of the books that they're going to order. So I got a lot of library orders because of that review. I had the fantasy review, the blog, called Eclipse Sci-Fi at its Best, which I use on my marketing relentlessly.
Of course.
Yeah.
As you should.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, so, and then a few others, Dominish Books, who's a booktuber, he picked up my book and he absolutely loved it, and he's helped me out a lot. So if people are looking for another booktuber to follow, Dominish Books is a good one. The Silverstone Bookstore, left me a great review as well, which I can't remember the exact quote from it, but I do have it on. I actually put it on my book cover for Resurgence, and they were thrilled with it too. So, I've gotten some great feedback, especially on that one. So it's always, you know, reassuring when you're writing the next book that you can write a good story. And, as much as they say that, us as authors aren't supposed to look at our reviews, I can't help myself. I have to do it.
And talking about marketing, what has changed for this new book? We've seen that you'll have a Kickstarter up soon, maybe even like when this goes live, maybe it will already be up. So was that like kind of one thing that you decided to try out now, and what are some other things that you picked up along the way that you'd like to share?
Yeah, so as far as the Kickstarter goes, yeah, it's launching May 25th, so if it's not up already, it'll be up pretty quick. You know, this is my 10th book, and it is a new genre for me, like, as we've talked about a lot. So I wanted to do something special for my 10th book. I had a lot of friends who were launching Kickstarters at, you know, around this time too. I know that, you know, they've done well, and I thought, you know, I really want to do something special for it being my 10th book. So especially it's a standalone, so anybody can jump into it. It's not like my 10th book is, you know, book four that people can't get into. And it really is something that needs a fresh audience. So I thought Kickstarter would be a good way to do that, to reach a brand new audience, do something special for my 10th book that I published, and really just have fun with, and something new that I haven't done before. So that was really my motivation for doing the Kickstarter. I've got my wife is an artist, so I've got her doing illustrations for it. I also have, you know, drink recipes, because it's, you know, the bartender between worlds, there's drink recipes that she encounters along the way. So those will be published in the Kickstarter edition as well. And I've got some, you know, cool recipe cards and that sort of thing that we've built for it. So that's the new thing that I'm doing. And the second part of your question was other marketing things that I'm doing with it. Yeah. So one thing I learned with Eclipse was reaching out and doing interviews like this really was helpful in kind of reaching new people and finding a new audience. So with this, I really have been trying to reach out to BookTubers and podcasts and that sort of thing to try to get on and talk about my books and talk to a new audience. And it's something that, you know, as a podcast host myself, I realize is definitely beneficial and it's a lot of fun. So that's been kind of one of the core pieces of my marketing for this book. I've kind of have a whole series lined up from now until release day with it. That I did a little bit for Eclipse, but I only did two or three shows. I've got like a dozen different interviews lined up for for this marketing tour here. So and really, you know, as indie authors, we don't get to do the bookstore tours that the big trad publishers or big trad authors do. And not even the small trad authors get to do that. We're really, lucky that we live in an age where we're able to reach out to somebody across the world and talk about our books, you know, face to face, and share it with an audience who is willing to listen to two guys talk about books, which I think is just amazing, right? And it's one of the reasons I started my podcast. So it's definitely something that I wanted to incorporate with my books and, you know, also meet other podcasters who are doing the same thing that I decided to do. I've done a few interviews now, and we always get to talk about the podcast that we're doing and the different things we've learned. And, that's been really cool.
For sure. And I agree with a lot of the points that you mentioned. I think that's really, as we said even in the beginning, this last couple of years, everything has been like super helpful for people getting that reach and continuously like having ways to put their work in front of people without necessarily having to rely on the resources that trad publishing provides. But of course, I mean, a lot of people still do like that. And that's also has its advantages. But thinking about that, Have you thought about audio and like that kind of distribution? Because I know that a lot of people who are indie had some like issues with places they could distribute their work, and especially when it comes to audio. So what's your experience with that?
Yeah, I haven't done an audiobook yet for any of my books. It's really just cost prohibitive for me. I haven't wanted to do the royalty share that, you know, I know Audible, you can do that through that. I haven't wanted to do that because I want the rights to it once I am able to do it. Through my Kickstarter, it will be one of my stretch goals to do an audiobook for this book. I really would like to make that happen. But so far it hasn't been in the cards yet. As far as accessibility goes, this book is going to be wide. You'll be able to get it anywhere. I'm hoping that the audiobook will be the same once I get to that point. My Fractured Orbit series is in Kindle Unlimited, which I'm not thrilled about, but I get a lot more page reads with it than I do purchases. So I've kind of went that way with that. I think that the space genre kind of tends to lean that way. A lot of it, I think, seems to be genre specific.
And speaking about your Kickstarter, you mentioned that your wife did a lot of the art, and how you got switched artists before, because I can imagine like the styles fit different themes, and those covers that we can see behind you are kind of, they are striking, but they're striking in a different way that the new one is. So how was your experience like finding the right art before, and has that process also changed with the new book?
Yeah, so my first few books, I went actually through Mibble Art, who is based in Ukraine, and they were really good. They put together, you know, kind of these stock manipulated covers for me that worked out. Fractured Orbit, though, you can see them behind me, but I've got clips here. I went with an individual named Covers by Christian, is his company name, and he put together that cover for me. It was a little pricier, but he did a fantastic job. With The Bartender Between Worlds, and I do have that here too for those who are watching, I went back to Mibble Art, and they have an illustrated cover here that you can get. If you look at a lot of the cozy fantasy, it's you look at Legends and Lattes, it's all kind of it's inspired by that book, and a lot of it's illustrated cozy in a tavern or in a bar or in a coffee shop or wherever the setting happens to be. They're all hand-illustrated covers. So when I was looking for something to do Bartender Between Worlds, I knew I kind of had to go that route to kind of fit in with the genre expectation of the cover. So Mibble Art's really affordable compared to a lot of the illustrators. And they did just a fantastic job. I was absolutely blown away by the cover, by the typography, by everything they did to put this cover together. So I've been really happy with that. You know, my wife's an artist. She's not a cover artist. It's a different set of skills. You kind of have to know what's trending in the market or what things are going to look like on a book. So I haven't used her for the cover design. It's just because her skill set is just a little bit different than what the cover art kind of requires. But it's all worked out.
Yeah, for sure. And that's really interesting. And for people who are just listening, they should really check out them. Of course, I'll leave the links to all of your work in the description wherever people get their podcast. But yeah, for me, it's also always interesting, like seeing how things pair up because, of course, for a while now, like don't judge a book by its cover is decreasingly relevant because, with so many people going into self-publishing and like, work being put on different platforms and people being able to share it, as we mentioned, just without like the weight that trad publishing demands. So we also have the competition. So it's kind of important finding the right artist. And yeah. Also for me, thinking about like marketing and art, how do you think like building your mailing list, as a lot of authors now have to do, and that part of things, do you think that like that's something that you would like to slowly push away to like delegate to someone else as the time passes by, or is it something that's also like good for you and keeps you like closer to your readers?
Yeah, I think I would definitely, if I had the ability to, I think it's probably a necessity at some point as people start getting busier. I'm not anywhere near that point yet where I'm looking to delegate that portion. It is nice being able to connect with my readers, and I think at some portion I'd still have to maintain some sort of control over that, at least sharing personal anecdotes and stories and that with the mailing list. I started a mailing list before my first book came out. It's been an interesting process to kind of see what people want out of my newsletters and want to hear. And definitely something I've had to rethink a little bit as I'm putting out a book in a new series, because my newsletter subscribers until this point have all signed on expecting science fiction to, you know, one degree or another. So I kind of, you know, had to set the expectation when this book came out saying, hey, I'm still going to write science fiction books, but I will also start writing some fantasy books. So do you want to hear about everything, or do you just want to hear about science fiction? And I had a couple people that say they just wanted to hear about science fiction, but more people said they wanted to hear about everything. So they seem to be happy at least to stick around. Whether or not they'll read everything I put out is another question, but they're happy enough to stick around while I kind of dabble in both genres.
Well, that sounds good. I think that as we talked about like drifting away from your genre and moving to others, I think that's something that's also maybe now like a given. People just like repeat it, but a lot of people don't test it because people talk about just stick to your genre, and in reality I think there are a lot of authors that can be successful in multiple genres. So I think that that's also exciting seeing that evolve. And speaking of genre, we've talked about cozy fantasy being kind of a thing that's moving into the spotlight now, and kind of of course grimdark is always there, but kind of this is more in the spotlight. And for like the sci-fi, we've recently seen some big things like Three Body Problems being adapted for Netflix series, Dune hitting big, and now I kind of feel that in the space and sci-fi arena, let's say there is things are kind of moving more big and huger in scope, but in fantasy they are kind of getting smaller. Would you agree?
Yeah, I think there's just, I'm not sure what the shift is, but I think you're right. Like, because we see like series like The Expanse, which is a big long series. We see even Red Rising, which started off as a trilogy, is now expanded into, you know, I think a seventh book is coming out soon. It definitely feels that way, and I feel like the sci-fi that is becoming popular is maybe capturing the attention of some of those epic fantasy readers that are looking for the longer stories and looking for kind of the more involved stories than kind of the shorter sci-fi series. But I mean, there are also short sci-fi reads that are doing quite well too. Like, you look at the Murderbot series by Martha Wells, which, I mean, those are novellas. It's a longer series now, but they're short books. So, I mean, there's definitely, I think, an appetite for everything. I think it's just that I think we leaned for fantasy. Things leaned to grimdark for quite some time. And then it was kind of about right around that time COVID kind of hit. And I mean, people really liked their grimdark fantasy, but I think there was really, this is kind of a reaction to grimdark as well, where it's like, okay, everything is dark. Whereas kind of some of the lighter fantasy reads, right? So, a lot of it's just shifting climates, and I think, but there's an appetite for just about anything out there. Like, I don't think grimdark is going anywhere. It's nice to see that there's some epic sci-fi that is starting to become popular, like the Three Body Problem and The Expanse and that sort of thing. That definitely helps me out in the books I'm writing. But because, you know, when I was putting these books out, it kind of seemed like there's an appetite for fantasy, but not much for sci-fi. But I do think there's a little bit of a swing towards sci-fi right now. So it is nice to see.
Agreed. And also the multiverse part of things, I think that's also something that we've been seeing recently. And of course, done like in some ways that are more cliched and some really creative ways. And what do you get from that? Like, what are some of examples of like use of multiverse that you particularly enjoy?
Yeah, I mean, the multiverse has always been a theme and one of those tropes that I've always been fascinated with, and it probably stems back to Star Trek. I mean, I grew up on Star Trek, and of course the Mirrorverse is kind of their parallel world that they kind of focus on, but they, you know, there's other instances of the multiverse in Star Trek as well, so that's probably my first appetite for it. I really like the 90s show Sliders, if you ever got the chance to see that. Where they're journeying through the multiverse. Book-wise, though, I mean, I really like V.E. Schwab's Darker Shade of Magic, where there's the three different versions of London that she's going through. I find that fun. It's a kind of a different spin on the multiverse, where it's all London and they're all magical versions of London. But I find that fascinating. I mean, recent examples, Loki was a great show. I really enjoyed that, and a bit of what the MCU has done. And other than that, even when we look at alternate history, versions of alternate history, The Man in the High Castle, the Amazon Prime show, where they're looking at an alternate, you know, reality where the Nazis won the war. I really enjoy that, and just taking a look at what could have been. What else might have happened if different decisions might have been made. And, you know, my podcast, even, you know, I called it, you know, the greatest podcast in the multiverse. And the last question I ask each guest when they come on is, you know, in a parallel world, how might another decision affected your life? And just, you know, the answers that I get to that question are just fascinating. I love hearing, you know, people who decided, and I know you talked to Zamil Akhtar on your podcast as well. His answer to that question was one of my favorites, because I chatted with him as well. And when he wrote Gunmetal Gods, he went out to a shop with a friend of his, and they were having a conversation about Game of Thrones and what would a different version of Game of Thrones look like, and that was what sparked Gunmetal Gods, and everything that came out of that was because of that conversation he had, because he decided to go to the coffee shop that day. And I, you know, the reason those sorts of stories intrigue me is that that is such a small decision in your everyday life of if you're going to go out with a friend or not today. how that small of a decision can affect everything that's come. Like, you see the Kickstarter that Zamula's done because of that, and the series that he's put out because of that conversation. To me, that those sort of little differences blow me away.
For sure, and I was actually planning on flipping the script on you and asking you that, so you can answer now to that.
I can answer now? Oh, man. Yeah, I try to give it... I've always had guests ask me this question back to me, and I try to give a different answer, but I wasn't planning on it today, so what in the unparalleled... You know, so the story that I give about why I started writing or publishing my novel is that I went... I started running with some friends the year before I published Lies the Guardians Tell. And we were just doing simple 5K runs at that time, which is a lot for me because I'm not a runner. I've never, well, I am now, but I had never been a runner up until that point. But I had some buddies convince me to go for some runs with them. And for some dumb reason, I agreed to sign up for a half marathon to run with them. But I did it, over the course, and it wasn't a long time that I gave myself to train. I think it was like four months or so that I went from literally couch to running a half marathon. But it was because of that half marathon. I had people come up to me after I ran that half marathon, congratulating me and saying, "Way to cross something off your bucket list." And I was like, well, running a half marathon wasn't really on my bucket list. I just kind of did it because some buddies asked me to join them. It's just something I did. But that those conversations got me thinking, maybe it is time that I do cross something off my bucket list. I'm getting close to 40 at that time. I maybe should try to do some of these things I've always wanted to do. And the number one thing was writing a novel. I'd always wanted to write a novel. As long as I can remember, was writing short stories and different things, but I never thought I had what it took to write a novel. But I realized that, if I can put in the effort and the time to train to run a half marathon, I can put in the effort to getting a book down on paper. So the answer to that I'll give to that question is that if I had decided to start running with those guys back then, I might not have never written my first book.
And that's a good one. And yeah, before I let you go, in line with your new book's theme and the Kickstarter, what is a cocktail that you would recommend to our listeners?
Oh, my favorite cocktail is a smoke old-fashioned. An old-fashioned is, it's pretty simple to make. It's, simple syrup and bourbon with a little bit of citrus twist in it. But if you get a smoked old-fashioned, you kind of smoke cherry wood and kind of let it sit on there for a bit and infuses the smoke into the drink. It's a pretty classic drink, but it's one that I'll always gravitate towards.
That sounds good. And with the smoke, we can also get the magic part of it. Exactly. So, yeah. Yeah, so Herman, thank you so much for your time and coming on to Storyline Sessions. It's been a pleasure, and we'll be for sure keeping an eye out for your new book and also the continuation of your series.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for having me, Marco. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye now.
Thank you for tuning in to another episode of the Storyline Sessions podcast. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. You can find Herman and his work using the links below. If you're interested in creative writing and storytelling in any kind of media, keep following the Storyline Sessions both here and on Instagram. My name is Marko Bogdanović, and I'll see you next time. Keep creating stories.